Hi, everyone, and welcome to the new Behind the Numbers show, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Mountain. I'm your host, Insider Intelligence Principal Analyst Susie David-Kenyon. Today is Wednesday, March 30th, and you're listening to the bi-weekly retail show that will cover all things retail and how it collides with every part of our lives, not just shoppers. Today, I'm really excited to be joined by Drew Green, Chief Executive Officer of Indochino, a visionary retail leader who has built one of the largest, fastest-growing apparel brands and has disrupted the retail sector by making perfect-fitting, personalized apparel available on a mass scale. I've seen Drew speak at many, many retail conferences, and I'm so excited to welcome him today.
Hi, Susie. How are you?
Great. I'm so glad that you could be here today. Welcome.
You know what? I really appreciate your time, and I've been excited to get on this call with you and go through things. So thanks again for inviting me. It's fantastic.
Awesome. Well, we're so happy to have you. So in the first half of the show, we'll be talking shop about how brands can use data to make different, better decisions to drive sales. We often talk about how customer data is critical to delivering a more curated experience for consumers. So today, we'll definitely chat about that, but we'll also look at other ways Drew and his team use data to make more savvy business decisions. In the second half, we have a store visit where Drew and I discuss how Indochino retail locations are set up to delight customers, the role of store associates, as well as how the online in-store experience intersects in their showrooms. But before we get started, Drew, as you probably heard in the last episode, we're going to start all my episodes with ratings and reviews, where we'll discuss a good or bad customer experience you recently had. What made it memorable, or what could the retailer have done to turn the experience around? So I'll start. This weekend, I was going to a friend's house and they adopted a new puppy. And so I went to the Petco, and I live in New York on 2nd Avenue, super close to my house. Very dilapidated outside. I was a little bit nervous, but I wanted something good. So I went in, and while inside it is very, very, very run down, the staff was so friendly and so helpful. And I knew nothing. I don't have a puppy. I know nothing about puppies. They were able to orient me into the right section. They got me the right toy. Actually, to be honest with you, I picked the wrong toy. I thought every dog likes a bone, but apparently that was not the right thing to get for a 10-week-old puppy. So they were able to reorient me, and it made me realize just how important, even if the store is really horrible and run down, that the associates in the store really play such an important role in making it a good experience.
Yeah, I totally relate with that. I've got two dogs and I've had a lot of in-store experiences for my dogs. But let me take a different category. You know, recently, you know, I took my boys into a Nike store, which, you know, they love the brand. They've loved it since they were little. They're 14 and 16 now. And you know, there is such a different experience going into a sporting store that has lots of different brands versus the Nike experience I had. And one of the things I look for, I guess maybe because I'm a retailer, is the word gratitude, if that makes sense. I really, really think an important part of an amazing retail experience is gratitude for the customer coming into the store, right? Because we should all be so lucky to have customers walk in to our store. And so just the way we were greeted, you know, the time the folks on the floor spent with my sons, helping them, you know, pick the shoe that they wanted. It was just such a really engaging experience. And they were just happy and grateful, you know, that we were there. And it was a busy day. And so that just made it a really great experience.
That's so nice. I mean, I think we don't realize just how important store associates are. And they really do. They're the face of the brand. And so it's actually not even a surprise. I'm totally going off gear now, but that some of our retail friends have started increasing the wages and the compensation and just other ways of retaining good talent. And that counts. The store associate counts.
Yeah. I think everybody in the companies in terms of what our mission and our vision are, but you know, those folks that are in our store talking to customers every day, there's no better representation of the brand, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, how they interact, you know, the gratitude that they show customers is so important.
Yeah, I love that example. And I feel like it makes me happy when we have good experiences.
100%.
So with that, let's talk shop. But before we get started, Drew, can you tell our listeners who might not know that much about Indochino a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Indochino has been around for a while. We're coming up now to close to 15 years. We're just about 14 years old now. And, you know, we've really evolved. We started as really the first, you know, online experience to create custom clothing and specifically suiting and shirting. And, you know, really taking a concept that had been around for hundreds of years, bespoke, you know, made to measure apparel, and bringing that online. And, you know, as we've evolved, we've really wanted to, you know, make the company more about providing and offering a service and an experience versus just a product. And so, you know, in 2015, we expanded into retail. We now have closing in on 100 stores across North America.
Wow.
Yeah. Super excited about how we've grown that side of the business. And a lot of those stores have actually been launched during COVID, which always shocks people because we've, you know, experienced some incredible milestones during COVID and some incredible growth. And so, you know, we really strive to provide that one-of-a-kind experience for one-of-a-kind apparel that our customers right. create, whether they do it online and really, you know, insert their measurements so that we get the perfect fit, or let one of our style guides in our showrooms, you know, really take them through the experience to create that one of a kind garment.
Right.
So as you said in the intro, you know, we've become one of the largest, if not the largest, custom apparel brand in the world. And we feel like one of the fastest growing apparel brands in the world. And so it's exciting.
Yeah, that's super exciting. And I know I've heard you speak about data very often when you do conferences and you talk about your business. You talk about how data is at the root of a lot of the different decisions you make. And we think about data a lot when it comes to customer experience and customizing, you know, the emails or the ping notifications that we're sending off. But there are lots of other ways of thinking about data. So I thought maybe we could talk about that today. Mass customization. Then we'll think a little bit about how do we use data to build out assortments. And maybe we'll have enough time to get to the physical location. It's really interesting that you guys built out that many stores during the pandemic when everything was shut down. So I'm sure data had a role to play in that.
Yeah, that's an awesome lineup of data top. Well, let's go through it.
Awesome. Sounds good. So according to Twilio Segment, they had a 2021 report where they found that 77% of consumers often are frustrated when they get push notification or text messages for promotions that they're not interested in. And I think when we think about data and customization, we think a lot about marketing in terms of the one-to-one or the one-to-many. I think there's been a lot of a change around how brands think about that. How do you guys think about that particular part of customization in terms of talking to the consumer?
Yeah, the first thing that I thought of there, Susie, is just how important, you know, fit is to the overall experience we deliver. So, you know, in a business that is really trying to solve one of the biggest challenges in apparel, which is, you know, getting a well-fitted clothing when you buy it, mm-hmm. you know, we've really, really zoned in on data to understand, A, how we can make sure when we intake measurements that we're doing it right, you know, that one of our style guides or the consumer when they go online is actually doing it right. So we've got a database of well over 1 million customers that have gone through the process, and we look for irregularities just through data. And then if we do see an irregularity, that's put back to the customer, back to the style guide to make sure we got it right. And that's really reduced, you know, simple word, our error. But a better word is it's reduced returns, it's reduced alterations, it's reduced remakes. And those three quadrants of our business, you know, alterations, remakes, and returns is something that we focus on relentlessly and have for the last decade, and getting them down from a numbers and data perspective. Because if we have less alterations, if we have less remakes, and obviously our return rate now is well under 1%, you know, we know we're doing a good job for the customer. And so we track that data religiously, and it's really become part of an algorithm that, you know, allows us to mass produce one of a kind garments at a very significant scale.
Right. I actually didn't realize you can return customized yeah. products. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you have to have a return policy, right?
And but it's a testament to how great the fit and the experience is if your return rate is so low. I don't know if our listeners realize that less than 1% is way, way, way below averages, industry averages.
Yeah. I mean, you know this, Susie, in apparel, you can have return rates of 15, 20, 25%, depending on the category, even higher in some categories. And then shoes, as another
example, it's even higher.
And so we take a lot of pride in our return rate, but we go further than return rate, right? We look at remakes. What a remake means in our world is that, hey, you know what? We didn't get it right. We can't do an alteration in in-house or alteration at Nordstrom. We're going to remake the garment for you. And, you know, that to us is just an opportunity to wow the customer, right? And so that's why we have them.
Well, speaking of wowing the customer, I mean, I had the chance to go to some of your showrooms, which was very cool. And we'll talk about that next. But it is a long cycle, right? People come, they get fitted. Yep. They wait 6 weeks, they get the garment back. But then how often are people buying suits and how are you staying connected to them?
Yeah, the first thing is we were talking earlier about great customer experiences we've had, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that's really inspired what we've created here at Indochino is some of the not so great retail experiences I was having. And so I don't know if you'll relate to this, just having gone into our showroom. You know, in 2014, 2015, when we were creating the concept, our showroom concept, you know, I'd go into a store, nobody would greet me. I'd go into a store and I'd look for my size and nobody would help me. And, you know, I'd go into a store, look for my size, think I found it, not want to wait in line for a try on, buy it and take it home and it doesn't fit. There were so many sort of awkward and not so great experiences I was having in buying apparel. That, you know, our showroom we feel is set up to totally reverse that. So number one, you set an appointment, right? You've got an allocated time, which everyone's time is really valuable. So you don't want people just sort of coming in and not being served. So they've booked a time, they come in, they work with somebody that's really highly trained, that loves the process of making apparel. And what actually happens is our customer becomes the designer. Right? Mm-hmm. Which how cool is that? You're able to sort of spend a half an hour to an hour creating a one-of-a-kind garment that nobody else will have or has. And so, you know, we really mapped out the process and re-engineered some of the challenges that we saw in retail experiences. And so that's been a big part of our success and how we focus on the experience versus product.
And, you know, all those touch points are different data collection points as well, which is really helpful. So speaking of data, I mean, I know that retail, when I first started, was a little bit more about gut, and then it skewed all the way to like being super data heavy. And now I think we're finding our way into the middle. How do you guys, because you could have overcorrected. I mean, the dress up category has been on a downward slope for the last 5 or 6 years, you know, with athleisure. I mean, well before COVID, you guys could have overcorrected, but you really leaned in to what you do. Help us understand how you thought about data in terms of assortment building and all those fabric swatches that I saw. Does data play a role in that as you think about your products?
For sure. For sure. I mean, you know, I'm kind of a little bit of a hybrid. I'm an entrepreneur, but I also consider myself an operator. And as an entrepreneur, you're constantly trying to use your gut, to be honest, in terms of navigating, you know, a business towards a vision or a mission that you have and your team has. But as an operator, you really have to be loyal and dedicated to the data. And so there's very few decisions we make, whether it's, you know, what type of fabric we'll have in store or online, what type of, you know, garments we roll out past suiting and shirting, which we're number one in the world at. But we now have outerwear. We now have khakis. We're launching women's later this year. All of those decisions were based on data, even down to our real estate strategy, you know, like, this company, you mentioned the category, we're 10 times bigger than we were in 2014, and we're a nine-figure revenue company, so we're a very big company. But a lot of that has to do with the systematic approach we had to expansion, right? And so, for example, with real estate, you know, we didn't just go to the cool side of the street or the cool mall. We really took the time to look at our customer data, understood where our customers were, and really wanted to provide them the option initially, really focus on where our customers were and provide them the option of doing it online or in showroom. And that really served us well because, you know, our payback, you know, I think was industry leading in those early years.
Right.
And even now, as we launch into smaller markets, our payback's very, very quick.
I think that's amazing because, I mean, data really is at the root of many decisions we're making. And so how did you guys use data to decide whether you should do your own showroom or partner with Nordstrom?
That's a great question. And so I've admired Nordstrom, you know, talk about great customer experience and a focus, a relentless focus on what's best for the customer. I've just admired Nordstrom as a brand and as an organization from afar for many, many years. You know, the truth is we've been talking to them. You know, I've been down to Seattle, I don't know, 24 times over the last 5-6 years. And so we really took our time to get to know each other. I was an admirer of how they focused on the customer. And I just felt like we could bring them a lot of value, you know, in terms of what we provide, because we're a bit of a destination, right? We're not solely reliant on walk-in traffic or, you know, traffic that's in the mall or in the store.
Well, and what you do is so hard to do, right? So you've already perfected that. There's no reason for them to try and figure it out. But it sounds like it was a little bit of gut sort of instinctual matchmaking that was also followed with data.
It was, but the data side of it was we knew we had a customer that they wanted to attract, right? You know, and we obviously know that through data, what type of customer we have and what type of customer we serve. But we also knew that, you know, when we looked at the other experiences out there for custom, you know, there's just nobody that compares. You know, some of our competitors deliver in 12 weeks and we deliver in 2.
Yeah, with high quality.
With high quality.
So that's the critical part.
It is. It is. And then here's a really interesting one, Susie, and I've never really talked about this, but one of the things that I really looked at was, you know, when you walk into a Nordstrom and you want to buy a suit, you're going to spend $1,000, $1,500, $2,000, right? If you want to buy outerwear, you're going to spend over $1,000. Shirting, expensive, but very high quality. And so what we felt we could bring Nordstrom was really high quality, but at an affordable price, right? Because that's kind of our mantra in terms of providing value. And they love that, right? And we're not a usual brand for them, but we couldn't be more happy with the partnership. It's just been an absolute home run.
Well, that makes me so happy to hear. Value is a whole other conversation that we could have, but we don't have time for that. I did want to ask you one more question about data. I mean, we talk a lot about customer data, but do you guys also keep track of the non-purchaser data? Do you have a mechanism to understand who they are and why they're not purchasing? And what could some of our listeners learn from what you guys are doing to try and turn those non-purchasers into purchasers?
Yeah, we do have that data. I think, you know, it's, and you asked me a question earlier, and maybe I'll circle back to that with that. We probably focus less on people that don't complete the purchase versus how do we get our customers back into the experience. So, you know, we have a very, very defined and rigid lifetime value model that we follow and we've looked at. And, you know, as you can imagine, you know, a man buys a suit and maybe he doesn't need one for another year or year and a half. And so we spent a lot of time in the last 10 years, and we knew that right away. We spent a lot of time on, okay, how can we get that gentleman back into the showroom, back into our online experience? And now a very big percentage of our customers actually come back in, you know, a month after. And
oh, right. Probably to buy a tie or like a handkerchief or
to buy another suit, because we provide them. We know their preferences, right? We know from data, we know that what colors they like, what customizations they like, perhaps what occasion. So for example, we have a huge wedding business. And so we know we're going to make a lot of fans of that wedding. And so how can we bring them back after they've had that experience? Yeah. And so that I would say we spend more time on, but certainly activating customers, you know, that haven't purchased is something that's really important. Stefan, who manages our marketing department, has had a lot of success providing incentives, you know, different types of fun incentives to customers. And then we do something that I'm pretty proud of, because I think we've, you know, really focused on this the last 7 years plus and done a good job, is we have events. Right. And so, you know, this upcoming event will be the Oscars, and we'll literally have thousands of customers in that single day, because we've created an event around the Oscars to activate new customers, but also, you know, engage existing customers.
I love this. I feel like we can keep going and going, but unfortunately, we have to take a quick break. Time for a quick word from our sponsor, Mountain, and then we'll be right back.
Hey If you could combine the precision targeting of digital advertising with the impact of television commercials, you would have an incredibly effective ad channel. And that's exactly what Mountain Performance TV does. Their connected TV software platform allows advertisers to reach their ideal audiences and drive more visits, conversions, and revenue, all from a single intuitive solution that's optimized to deliver performance. Visit Mountain.com to learn more.
Okay, time for the second half of the show. We have a store visit where Drew and I will chat about how the Indochino retail showrooms are set up and what sets them apart to delight customers. So here we go. Drew, I went to two of your stores. I went to the Soho store, which was very busy, much smaller, I think, in size than the Madison Avenue one, which I understand is your flagship. Very, very busy. But what I found between the two stores, even though their layout was different and the vibe was the same, like the staff you have is so friendly. The mannequins are impeccable. There are streams and streams of different colored fabrics, all organized sort of by colorway, which was amazing to see. And then what made me super excited was in both stores, there were customers there who were thriving. They were so excited to pick out their materials. They were super, super engaged with your store associates. And they were even very openly talking about their wearing occasion. And so I thought maybe we could just spend a little bit of time talking about the store experience, what your vision is, how it comes together. We know from a lot of data that we do and a lot of our studies that we keep track of, and Bazaar Voice specifically in December 2021 said that the number two reason shoppers worldwide would stop patronizing a retail operation is for an experience that was poor, a poor in-store experience, really. And it goes back to what we were saying originally at the top of the show, right? A bad store experience is very memorable. So if we think about that, your store experience was amazing. I didn't actually buy anything there because I'm not there yet, though I'm very excited for when you're going to have the women's wear. But I did identify three areas that I thought we could chat about. So the first one is around the layout. And then I thought we could talk about your employees and what an important role they play, especially as a point of differentiation. And then maybe this part, help me understand, how are you guys thinking about experiential retail and especially the bridging of the online and in-store experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first area, just in terms of our design and layout, and, you know, I think our team has just done a masterful job, right? You know, you go into a showroom in New York like you did, or you go into a showroom in Seattle, Boston, San Francisco, LA, wherever you might go, it's a very, very consistent look and feel. And consistency is important, I think, in any retail business. If you're in the food side of retail, or if you're in apparel or whatever category, you know, consistency has to be, you know, a mainstay or a pillar within the business. And so we've spent a lot of time making sure that our look and feel, our design is consistent.
Even that living room space, you know, with that was the exact same couch, the exact same, I think even maybe the books were the same. It's uncanny. Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about that living room space that you guys have created.
Well, you know, what I'll tell you about that is, you know, one of the other things that's really important in terms of running a retail business is the ability to scale, you know, through opportunity. And so if you're not consistent in, for example, where you buy that couch or how you lay out, you know, a 2000 square foot footprint, we average about 2400 square feet, but I'll just use 2000 as an example, it's going to be very hard to scale. And so an example of scale for us is, you know, in February, we launched 8 showrooms in 8 days.
That's 8 incredible.
Stores in 8 days. And we don't have, you know, dozens of people working on that side of the business. We have a team, they're amazing, but a very small team. And they were able to do 8 showrooms in 8 days. And so
I just want to put that in perspective for some of our listeners. I mean, there are major retailers who talk about 30 new store openings in a whole year.
Yeah.
So 8 in 8 days is a lot. That's amazing.
It is a lot. And, but that goes back to having, you know, a very defined style and design format that goes back to the consistency of, you know, the experience you want to deliver. And then, you know, to your second point, having an amazing team. Right. Which we take a lot of pride in.
That living room space, though, really felt like a connection point for me when I was there. There were people sitting in the seats. There were folks that were couples that were looking at things together. Yeah. I felt really like a homey sort of space that made, you know, because it can be daunting. It's almost like your layout is created in a way to make it very easy for a first-time buyer or like the 30th time coming back to get a suit buyer. Yeah. A really friendly space. And I was wondering, I mean, obviously it's designed like that, but are there any specific elements that you guys look for in the layout to really help drive that point home that this is meant to be like a very special occasion for you?
Yeah. I mean, the suit is our hero product. So we've got shirting and we've got outerwear and we've got khakis and other categories, but the suit is our hero product. And the suit is the focal point of a wardrobe. And I know there's been a casualization and, you know, not going to work, not wearing as many suits, but it's still a mainstay in your closet or in a man's closet. And it's usually tied to an experience or an event. So maybe that's a wedding. Maybe that's a graduation. Maybe that's a big date or a night out with friends. And so we wanted our showrooms to provide an experience. We knew we'd have a lot of, you know, young couples coming into our showroom, planning out their wedding. And so we wanted it to be comfortable and not technical, if you know what I mean. And that's design is important to that. Layout is important to that. And then your second point, you know, our staff is probably the most important to it. How they're trained, how they show gratitude, and how they embrace, you know, the overall experience that we're providing.
Well, and you know what I thought was really interesting? And I heard them, you know, do this so sweetly. They're there to help guide styles, right? So they're there to help you put things together. And they have to take what you're looking for. And obviously, that is the foundation of your suit.
Yeah.
But also knowing their own experience to say like, no, actually, you know what? Paisley green doesn't go well with fill in the blank, right? And so like, how do you train them, your employees, to give them that sense of warmth and ownership all the while realizing that in the end, it's whatever the customer wants?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's a little bit of who you hire and hiring right. And then there's also the training that we've continuously gotten better at, right? And so, you know, we look for people that, you know, really have a passion for style, right? Have a passion for, you know, what's happening within, you know, the fashion industry and different color combinations, et cetera, et cetera. And so having that ingrained when we hire somebody is a really big thing we look for. But then also, you know, you've got to provide a platform for these style guides and for our retail staff to be successful. And so we invest a lot of time in training, not just when they're hired, but all the way through. And, you know, hats off actually to, you know, our retail management team, because I think they've just done a masterful job in terms of training, in terms of retention, you know, in a time right now where it's hard to hire. You're hearing a lot about that. You know, we have a lot of very loyal associates at the retail level that, you know, we want to make sure are with us for many, many years to come.
So I think that's awesome. And I think I have one more question, which is at the forefront of everybody's mind in terms of, especially post-COVID, you know, people like shopping in a store. There is a Radiant study from July 2021 that says 35% of respondents prefer to shop at a location because they want that experience. Right. And then 24% of them say that it's because they want to touch and feel the product. And so that clearly comes out in your showroom. The other trend we're seeing a ton is this hybrid digital physical sort of experiences. And you did talk a little bit about activations and experiential retail, and the Oscar party, for example, I'm assuming is at the showroom in addition to probably online in some mechanism. But how are you guys really bridging? I know that the sales associates have the style guide, folks have iPads, but how else are you bridging that online in-store experience? Is there a way that a customer walking into the store sees that?
Yeah, I mean, so maybe going back to the data as a key driver of strategy, you know, for us, what we learned very early in our retail rollout was, based on the appointment, based on virtual inventory, based on creating a one-of-a-kind garment and having this amazing experience with a style guide, you know, our average order value is 25% higher in store than it was online. That gap is closing a little bit, but it's much, much higher in showroom versus online. Wow, that's a big number,
that
right?
That is a lot.
Yeah. And so that gives you confidence to say, look, there's just some customers out there that prefer to have guidance and prefer a style guide to walk them through versus doing it online. But then you've also got to respect that online customer, because some people will just want to do it online. And then it goes back to that word of consistency. So whether I purchase online or whether I have a style guide, you know, work with me to create that garment, the back end experience needs to be very, very consistent. And so it is, right? Everything's tied in together. Everything goes to our factories where we've got 2,500 plus people working on our garments every day. And, you know, the delivery time is no different whether you order it online versus in showroom, as one example, but there's many others.
Right. Well, and you know, I had wanted to ask you about clienteling. It's such a big buzzword right now for luxury brands. And then it occurred to me that all your customers are not just walking in usually. They're coming with an appointment. So all of a sudden you have all the data about them and you can really customize that experience for them.
That's right. I mean, we woke up, you know, this morning, Monday morning, want to get this number right, but it's close to 4,000 pre-booked appointments for the week.
Right? Wow.
So from Monday to Sunday, and they grow every day by hundreds.
Right.
And so, you know, that's an amazing thing for us from a data perspective, and why I do believe appointment-based virtual inventory is the future of retail is that now we can plan our retail labor, right? Now we can plan our supply chain. Now we can plan all those wonderful things that go into a great customer experience ahead of time based on the data that we have.
Yeah. I mean, I could keep going on and on, because if you think about, I agree with you about the inventory takes up a lot of space in a retail location, and you don't always have the right size color combination. So then you're disappointing the customer because you don't have what they're actually looking for. So just not having the inventory in the store, I think, for certain product categories really does make sense.
Well, yeah.
For SKU-intensive product categories.
Yeah, and think of it from a data perspective. So, you know, when you have a store side-by-side with Indochino that sells similar product, you've got the same cost to design, you've got same cost to hire. But then if you take away inventory from one, you've got a huge competitive advantage. So, you know, we've got competitors that have, you know, $400,000, $500,000, up to $1 million of inventory that they've got a pre-purchase for the store launch. And I just said we launched 8 stores in 8 days without inventory. So we don't have any of that overhead or what I call risk capital in terms of inventory going into a store.
Yeah, you're totally right, Drew. It makes sense now that you guys were able to open so many stores so quickly if you didn't have all that cash outlay for the inventory. Well, that's the end of today's show. Thanks to everyone who tuned in. And thank you, Drew, so much for joining me on today's episode.
Yeah, thanks, Susie. I really enjoyed today's conversation. We'll see you again soon, okay?
I hope so. And we'll be back in a few weeks on April 13th with another episode of Reimagining Retail. Don't forget to check out tomorrow's episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Mountain.